Let's get back to more Judson Richards on 104.3 The Score.
PCA drives one in the air to right field. Did he get it? Yes! It's a two-run home run for Pete Crow Armstrong. A line drive, fair by maybe 30 feet, just into the first or second row of the stands. He has homered in back-to-back games. Maybe this is a turnaround. Cubs lead 3-0. That's a big one.
Oh, great to hear Pat Hughes' voice. Even better when he's calling a Pete Crow Armstrong home run. Even better than that, back-to-back bays, PCA potentially heating up and starting to get going. And home runs certainly matter. I'm going to give you a great statistic on Cubs home runs last year, how much they have a hand in winning. We'll get to that in just a moment. 312-644-6767. We're doing a bit of a check-in with Cubs fans. We figured as we kind of put April to bed and turn the page to the month of May, as the Cubs are 19-12, how are you feeling about the high ambitions of this Cubs team? We will talk Cubs with Alex Cohen at 8 o'clock of the Marquee Sports Network. We will talk some Bears, a little stadium saga as well, with Patrick Finley of Chicago Sun-Times coming your way at 7:25. But as of now, back to the text, back to the phone calls of what you make of this Cubs team. We know 19-12 is very, very good. Seven games over 500. If the Reds lose to the Colorado Rockies today, Cubs would find themselves a half game out of first place. Also, the Reds coming to town next week as well at Wrigley Field, so they have a chance to match up. It would be nice if the weather heated up. I'm not expecting it to be Petco Park in San Diego or Chavez Ravine where the Dodgers play, but it's 46 degrees. That's the high on Friday against the Arizona Diamondbacks. Perhaps they can freeze out the team from the desert. But as we'd like to see this team start to get going offensively, would kill us to have a little bit of warmer weather here in Chicago. That not expected to be the case on Friday. A day game, dress accordingly. Of course, a game you'll hear right here on 104.3 The Score. Bullpen, starting rotation. Are you looking at Jed Hoyer? We know we got a couple months to go, but again, if you have high expectations, a lot of injuries, what do you make of this roster as of now? Jared, out there in Arlington Heights, has been waiting patiently with the score. Jared, what's going on?
Hey, man, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
You got it, bud. How are you?
I'm good. I'm just on my way back home from work, so I've been listening to you. I've been loving what you guys are talking about. I really am loving this team right now. They are a handful on offense.
Is there a but in there, though? I love this team, but...
But I'm just thinking, like the last caller listening to Rossi and Rizzo, I'm thinking about that three-headed monster they had for starting pitchers that year that they wanted. They had three guys in the top 10 in the Cy Young Award running. So I really think they got to go out and get a starting pitcher, and Freddy Peralta is my guy. I think he's a rental. He'll be a little cheaper, and I think that will push a couple of guys back down to the bullpen, and I think that will get us over that hump, because we cannot go in with just one starting pitcher into the playoffs like last year.
That's an interesting one. Yeah, Freddy Peralta, no longer a Brewer, now with the New York Mets, who they get a 12-game losing streak. I mean, they turned it around a little bit, but the Mets and the Phillies, right? It's interesting, some of these big market teams, a lot of money spent, but there could be some opportunities out there, although, again, teams that are spending that much money, you got a long ways to go, as we were still only in April 29th. Jared, before you go, what have you enjoyed most about the – you're the second person to mention, and I think you did because the other caller, but the Rizzo-Rossi podcast, what – is there an episode or a moment you've enjoyed the most?
I really love the Joe Maddon stuff. I really,
yep,
really loved him as a manager. I thought he was just so intelligent and so – just fresh every day and very different. I think that's why he was hired and he got the job done. But honestly, just the nostalgia of it is really just the driving force of that podcast. It's interesting to hear other guys' perspectives and just listen to some of the veteran presence that they had in that locker room, which I do see a lot of that in this team that we have right now. Another reason why I think we should really be all in on this year.
Jared, thanks for the phone call. Do you agree with him? 312-644-6767. I have not listened a ton to the podcast. I certainly did enjoy the first one. I need to get caught up. Speaking of Joe Maddon, if you were the Mets or if you were the Phillies, not the Mets, but the Mets manager will probably be fired shortly. But from the Red Sox to the Phillies, like I just I don't know, selfishly, I just want Joe Maddon back in the game of baseball. I enjoy listening to him on the MLB Network. The one quote that stuck out to me the most in that podcast was, well, it was within the first 20 minutes when they were first talking, he and David Ross, and Anthony Rizzo said, starting or heading into the 2016 season, even before the season began, we'd already won the World Series. We just needed to press play. I thought that was such a great quote. Mentally, he'd already won the World Series on the season. They just needed to press play. That is the kind of confidence they had coming out of the 2015 season. Back to 2026, 312-644-6767. A couple stats for you. We are so focused on this Cubs bullpen, as we should be. Not only does it feel patchwork to begin with, but you've had so many injuries. But I will remind you the importance of the home run. The Cubs record in 2025, when they homered, not multiple home runs, not when the opponent didn't homer and they did, just when the Cubs homered in a game, they were 72-34. Like, that stat is wild to me. It has nothing to do with what the opposition, just simply, did you homer? Yes? Well, then you had an incredible winning percentage. This year, when they homer, 16-6 when they homer. So when we're celebrating Pete Crow Armstrong homering in back-to-back games and looking like he's having a better approach at the plate, it doesn't just mean good, PCA is finally swinging the bat well and we can celebrate his beautiful home runs. It also often equates to a much better winning percentage. Remember, Michael Busch had 34 home runs last year. Seiya Suzuki hit 32 home runs. PCA hit 31. I mean, those were career years for all of those guys. PCA, obviously, very, very young. Seiya's got five already in 18 games. So, yes, when we take a look at this bullpen and who it is and if they need to make moves, absolutely. It is drastically important. But I also can't stress to you how it is that Michael Busch returns to form somewhat from the power department. And yes, I want to see PCA be more of a contact guy and have a better on-base percentage. But him homering, like his natural just power that he has, simply equates to victories. 72-34 last year for the Cubs in games that they homered. That was fourth best in Major League Baseball. There's a lot that goes into it. You can't just homer and pitch terribly. You can't just homer and play terrible defense. But I think it gives you an inkling. If you do pitch well, if you can play great defense like the Cubs do, if you can also add in the power, that can be the game changer. A big game changer today was the game that Ben Brown had. I mean, that was a big boy moment for Ben Brown, who was, you know, it was almost like a coming of age story for Ben Brown a little bit today. Let's hear from Craig Counsell on the Ben Brown outing.
Yeah, I mean, that was the game, and you know, that didn't go well for Corbin, but, you know, Ben got three outs and I think five pitches against Tatis and Machado. That's not easy to do at all. And then, you know, he got two quick outs and then in the ninth as well. So huge outing from Ben Brown. You know, that's as tough a situation as you can come into. And, you know, he crushed it.
He did outstanding. Got the double play ball, the 4-3 against Manny Machado with runners at first and third in a one-run game. Made it all the way to two outs. Had a chance to finish a game, but let's credit Craig Counsell. He made the move for Hobie Milner to throw one out. He got the one out, and the Cubs survive. They go 3-3. They split in San Diego and against the Dodgers. That's pretty impressive if you sneak in a three-game losing skid in there. But the Friday night game against the Dodgers, and then this win on Sunday. As I said in the open, at times they seem to be much better. Like the sum is better than the parts, and specifically when you're looking at the bullpen. But they're also just a very veteran-laden group. Like, that's one thing that's really impressed me about this team. One of the things where that gave me an inkling, oh, okay, this team could really be something. The day that Cade Horton went down, when that news was announced, they may have gone out and played their best game. Right, you didn't see them spiral, which a lot of teams could have. The Cade Horton news and the Justin Steele news. And there's not been a lot of great news when it comes to the potential ace of the staff for the Cubs, but you do not see them hang their heads. You seem to just watch them keep moving, and that's what you have when you have veterans. That's why you go out and pay an Alex Bregman. So he's not just a bat in the lineup, but he's also a dude as well. Can we hear from Jameson Taillon on Ben Brown as well? J-Mo, who went seven innings today, he had a gutsy outing as well. Here's what he had to say about Ben Brown. We do not have that just yet. But when we do, I promise you, we will get it. 312-644-6767. Judson Richards along with you, David Dykstra and Tyler Fennergill on the other side of the glass. I am going to continue to stare deep into their eyes until they get it. They have got it. Here's J-Mo.
Incredible. I mean, that's the game right there. We've seen Ben grow up so much. And, you know, he's being used in multi-inning roles, which is a huge role already, but then the leverage he's being put in, and I think everyone trusts him and everyone's pulling for him. He's an easy guy to root for, but you know, just to see him kind of grow and evolve has been really fun.
I gotta be honest, if you were to just somewhat follow the news or just kind of social media and didn't watch the games, the Cubs would not feel like a 19-12 team, probably because every time you turn around, the news isn't necessarily a win. It has to do with more of an injury. And this, you know, this is the beautiful part about the game of baseball, right?
Like
the Cubs can have a 10-game winning streak and you're like, this team is spectacular. And then they can also have a 3-game losing skid and you're like, I mean, forget about October. You may end up in Cancun. And I often think about who watched King of Queens? I often think about this scene from King of Queens. Do people watch sitcoms anymore? I don't think so. So if you did, you probably saw this, because that's when people, right after, like, Everybody Loves Raymond, we may have stopped watching sitcoms, but King of Queens, Kevin James, and Arthur Spooner is his stepdad, otherwise known as Jerry Stiller, who is Ben Stiller's father. And there's a scene where he has jury duty. And so it takes you into the mind. Here is the inner monologue of Arthur Spooner on jury duty.
You will hear testimony demonstrating that the gravel...
Boy, oh boy, this guy is guilty of sin. You're going to the big house if A. Spooner has anything to say about it.
The defense will prove that Mr. Schubert's fingerprints do not match those on the gun found on the loading dock.
Wait a minute. His fingerprints weren't on the gun.
Wait a minute.
This is a witch hunt.
This is a witch hunt. Guilty of sin, witch hunt. And the beautiful part about Major League Baseball is over 162 games, you could be convinced that your team is terrible, and then maybe three games later, you're like, we're going all the way to the World Series. We're going to the NLCS. This guy is guilty of sin. This is a witch hunt. And I find myself very much in this Cubs team. It's like, they are unstoppable. And then you watch Craig Counsell try to work together as bullpen, and you'll be like, this team better get their golf clubs out, because they're not going anywhere. So we're asking you, 312-644-6767. I know we're riding this roller coaster together. Are you in or are you out with what we're watching from this team? Again, some of these numbers, when they hit home runs, 72-34 last year when they found the long ball. I've got another great stat for you, because this could help this bullpen. And David and Tyler, I'm going to ask both of you to guess, all right? 1999, a young me, Judson Richards, graduating from high school, all right? Tyler, you probably weren't even born yet. David, I know that you were. In 1999, what percentage of Major League Baseball games saw the starting pitcher throw 100 pitches or more? What percentage of Major League Baseball games saw the starting pitcher throw 100 pitches or more in 1999? I'm going to need quick guesses, guys. Let's get it going. I know it threw this at you.
I'm going to say 35%.
Okay, 35%. 35%. That's your guess, Tyler. David, what do you say?
I'll go 42.
Okay, all right. We're getting closer. In 1999, starting pitchers threw 100-plus pitches 46.8% of the time. This is another great stat that I grabbed from the Marquee Sports Network. Now, in 2026, what percentage... Same question, 100 pitches or more, what percentage of Major League Baseball games over the course of a season have had a starting pitcher go 100 pitches or more? What percentage?
5.
5%, says Tyler. David, what do you say?
I'll go 19.
Whoa! It is actually 7.9%. Yes, it has dipped from 46.8% in 1999 down to 7.9% in 2026. Why do I bring that up? because it would be nice to see the Cubs starting pitchers could go a little bit deeper into a ball game. One of the reasons why they came away victorious today, yes, Ben Brown was exceptional, but guess what? I also didn't need to name four other guys that followed suit for them to get out of that ballgame. Okay, maybe there were three arms that went. Okay, Caleb Martin did not get an out. Corbin Martin, sorry. Caleb Martin, I think, plays in the NBA. Corbin Martin did not get an out, face one hitter. That's right. He walked three. Yeah. So this goes to my point a little bit. Deeper in the ballgame, less you have to lean on your starting rotation. Again, do I expect a lot of these arms to go 110, 115, 120? No. But when you have your starting pitcher, I'm looking at you, Matthew Boyd, go 4 1/3, then you're asking your bullpen to not only be great, but probably be much better than your talent is going to allow you to be in that bullpen. Tyon went 7 innings, allowed 3 earned runs. That is an exceptional outing. Didn't even have to get into 100 pitches. Got to 95 pitches. But it would help a bullpen. As the Cubs try to figure that bullpen out, it would be nice if the starting rotation could get into the fifth. No, how about even a crazy thought, the sixth inning to help it out. Because I was looking at the 2025 team, Brad Keller, 68 games, a 2.07 ERA. And that was the guy they found. Caleb Thielbar, 67 games, a 2.64 ERA. Drew Pomeranz was in Tacoma in AAA, 57 games, a 2.17 ERA. Then Daniel Palencia had the most amount of outings, 54 outings, 2.91 ERA. But it was Keller, Thielbar, Pomeranz, Palencia. And then Kittredge was good as well. Presley for a short time was okay. But before they can find that rhythm, if they can, whether it's guys off the streets or not, like that was pretty brilliant maneuvering. They were able to put together a bullpen last year. 92 wins last year was a Herculean effort. Can they get back to this year? They're going to have to figure out something with that bullpen. Some way, shape, or form. Health will be number one. And perhaps it's going out of free agency. But for them to develop some rhythm of who Craig Counsell has going to, you still feel like they are a long ways away from that. But the good news is they're 19-12, still trying to find it, still trying to get there. All the injuries, potentially a half game out of 500 at end of day today. You want to talk Cubs? Let's do it. 312-644-6767. We're checking in with you a month in. Is this team where you believe right where they should be, wins and roster-wise as well? Let's also talk a little Bears coming up next with Patrick Finley of Chicago Sun-Times. We wanted to dive into this question. Who is the most important Bears draft pick this season not named Dylan Thienemann? We'll get the latest on the stadium as well. It's coming up next on 104.3 The Score.
Let's get back to more Judson Richards on 104.3 The Score.
If I could offer one football analogy, just as the course of a game, things ebb and flow, they go back and forth. Sometimes there is great momentum on one side. Sometimes the momentum shifts suddenly to another side. I've said to our family, we need to be patient and let the deal come to us. We think a deal will materialize somewhere. We're comfortable with either site.
All right, that was George McCaskey back at the owners' meetings talking about the deal. I thought we're going to get into the art of the deal there a little bit, but no, still trying to make the deal, whether it's Illinois or Indiana. We wanted to talk not only about that, but the draft as well with Patrick Finley of the Chicago Sun-Times. I'm Judson Richards with you all the way until 9 o'clock this evening, joining you on 104.3 The Score. Patrick, let's begin here. The stadium saga, the stadium situation. What should we know in plain English? What's the latest?
They have until May 31st to get something figured out with the state of Illinois. If not, I believe they will go to Indiana. If they get something sorted out with the state of Illinois, then they'll have a decision to make. Pilot legislation, which essentially gives them a tax break on their property taxes, passed through the House It's now going to go through the Senate. Pittsburgh made it clear that they want some amendments in there for it to be satisfactory to them within the Senate. So we will wait if Illinois can pass legislation that makes the Bears happy. The Bears then need to work out how to get funding for roads, pipes, all that sort of good stuff. There's a mechanism for that, but it's not a slam dunk, and nothing is done until it is done.
When George McCaskey spoke about it recently, and he kind of said Bears fans will get on board whichever state we're playing in, what was your takeaway with the way that he handled it and answered that?
Yeah, I was there for that. That was at the owners' meetings. I thought it was maybe a little flippant. I mean, he said something about, you know, the Republic survived, you know, the Jets and Giants playing in New Jersey.
Yep.
And, you know, maybe that's true, but, you know, everybody in the sports world has, you know, since the day that happened in East Rutherford, has considered that just bizarre that two New York teams don't play in New York. I think lumping the Bears in with that, I don't think that normalizes this in the way that maybe George thinks it does. I think, and from the people I've talked to over there, my impression is this. They will go to Indiana if they have to. And that is the way I think Bears fans should think about it. I think Indiana is a soft landing spot if they don't get what they want in Illinois, and they will go there if they have to.
He's Patrick Finley of the Chicago Sun-Times. Does a great job covering the Bears. My favorite on the beat. Patrick Finley with us tonight on 104.3 The Score. Patrick, turning our attention to the draft a bit. Do we believe the Bears that all they need to do is just coach up that defensive line room and then things will be better, if not vastly better?
No, we don't.
Good.
Ben Johnson said what Ben Johnson should say there, which is the context was everybody needs to be better at this, including our coaches who need to coach the thing better. There's really nothing else he could have said after the Bears went through free agency and then the draft without picking a defensive end that can help them. Whether there's somebody on the street that they can add between now and training camp, we will see. I don't know that some of these big names, which are very familiar names in the sports world. I mean, you know, you're talking about Cam Jordan and Bosa and Jadeveon Clowney. Those are names we've all heard of. I'm not sure any of them make this line markedly better at all. If anything, they're a rotation piece that you throw in on third down. So the Bears have to live with what they've got, and maybe the only path there to being any better this year than last year is for those coaches to coach a little better and for the four defensive ends they have to be healthy at the same time. When you look at Austin Booker, you know, he was really good, but he was hurt for half the year. And kind of just as he came back, you know, Shamar Turner went out and Dio Odengbo went out. So all four of those guys weren't on the field at the same time at any point last season. If they can make that work this year, I guess they'll be a little bit better, but it is far from what many of us had hoped they'd do this offseason.
Do you think they have any sort of a trade up their sleeves or, you know, or a free agent signing? Could we be surprised at how aggressively they could change their tune of what they said about, no, we believe in our defensive line room, we just need to coach better? Could there be a drastic shift, whether it's before the season or during the season?
I don't know about drastic. You know, could they look at somebody like Kayvon Thibodeau from the Giants and figure that maybe he can help? Sure, but, you know, the Bears don't have a lot of money to spend against the cap. They could, you know, rework a couple of more contracts and create a little more room, but that's pushing money into the future. And I don't know, quite frankly, whether the Kayvon Thibodeaus of the world are worth that. To me, what's a lot more intriguing is, you know, if the Bears are in this thing at the trade deadline, then maybe you might have some action. You know, I don't want to say that Max Crosby could be traded at the deadline because Lord knows what's going to happen with that situation, but it's a possibility. You know, I don't know if there would be veterans on bad teams or, you know, or underperforming teams that could shake loose around that time. Maybe that's more practical than hoping that you can pull a lottery ticket out of, you know, whatever guys are left on the street right now.
Excluding Dylan Thiemann, who's the most important draft pick for the 2026 season specifically?
Oh my God. Probably Muhammad, the Texas cornerback. You know, he has a chance, I think, to push Tyreek Stevenson. Could he surpass him? I don't know. But I think having somebody to push Tyreek Stevenson is important, even if Tyreek wins out there. I think you need to keep pressure on him to ensure that you get the best version of him. The way you phrase your question is really interesting, because what they did in the second round makes sense, in 2027. And I think there's value to that. I think getting a center now, so you don't have to go on the free agent market and pay mid-range guys literal, 10 plus million a year, which is what we saw this offseason. I think there's value there. I think there's value in picking up a third tight end, teaching him the system, and then looking around and wondering what you're going to do with Cole Kmet maybe a year from now or 2 years from now. I think there's value in having that depth. But, in terms of helping right away, maybe half the Bears draft picks are realistic helpers in 2026.
What have you enjoyed most learning about the sixth round pick in Jordan Vandenberg, the defensive lineman out of Georgia Tech?
Everybody in his family has been in the athletics somehow. I think he had a grandpa or great uncle or something who went up against Arnold Schwarzenegger in a Mr. Universe competition. And when he said that, my mind flashed to Hans and Franz, the old SNL guys. I enjoyed the heck out of that. I love the fact that he owns a laundromat in Atlanta, too. Anybody who can talk about making passive income, 10 minutes after he got drafted by an NFL team, that seems like an interesting guy and somebody I want to get to know better.
Remember when I called you Thursday and I bothered you about which edge rusher, pass rusher they were going to take? It wasn't a conversation of would they. It was ultimately who would they end up taking. I apologize for wasting 20 minutes of your time there. But you did give me a really good quote from Liam Cohen, which I think we may be able, not necessarily apply to the Bears, but I think it's a really good idea. Keep in mind, where both of those franchises are with new head coaches and be in year two.
Yeah, I talked to Liam Cohen at the owners meetings about the idea that now what do you do? What do you do in year two after you've just won your division? And he's in the same boat that Ben Johnson's in. And what Cohen said essentially is, I am very prepared for the idea that we could have a better team in 2027 than we did in 2026 than we did in 2025. And we will have a much worse record. His goal is not to get hung up on whether they win 12 games or 13 games or 11 games, but to try to keep improving, knowing that some things may break the wrong way and that that's okay. And that is absolutely where the Bears need to be this year. The Bears had so many close finishes go their way last year that I think it's completely possible that they could win fewer games this year and still have a better team when it comes time to get to the playoffs than they had last year. So we'll see whether that comes to pass. But I think if you look at it any other way, you're probably going to drive yourself crazy because, like I said, not only did the Bears have some pretty great escapes last year, but, they also were playing the last place schedule. And that is not going to be the case this year.
Bigger challenge for the Bears this upcoming season. Is it to not try to navigate those final 2 minutes to come from behind or to be a team that can be more dominant from a defensive line and play and get to the quarterback more and just be a better disruptor there?
Yeah, they need to be more well-rounded, I think is the best way I would put it, is that you need your offense to start off hot or at least not cold so you don't have to rely on them to pull you out of the fire at the very end. And you need a defense that can do more than just kind of hang on. The Bears, I think to their credit, recognize that just hoping for turnovers was not a strategy. And that, we could quibble with some of the guys they let go, but, the Kevin Byards of the world, the Jaquan Briskers were let go because they didn't think that the defense was good enough last year. And they've replaced the two of them with guys who are faster, guys who are more violent. And we'll see whether they're better, but they fit into Dennis Allen's ethos a little more cleanly. We'll see there. The nice thing about both Seaman and Kobe Bryant, too, is that, they can grow together. They are going to be better halfway through the season than they are in week one and better at the end of the season than they were halfway through it. And I'm not sure you could have said that about Nashawn Wright or Kevin Byard or Jaquan Brisker or C.J. Gardner-Johnson, who are veterans who have played a lot of football, but you kind of know what you're going to get there.
I'll remind our listeners, there is no paywall for the Chicago Sun-Times. It's a beautiful thing for news and sports as well to get to keep up with your favorite teams and all that is happening in Chicago. Patrick Finley, thanks so much for your time tonight.
Hey, anytime.
So Patrick went with
Malik Muhammad, the fourth round selection for the Bears, the cornerback that will be the most, most important in 2026. Again, specifically, I'm talking about this season because for the future, they're all important. They're all. I mean, you could say they're almost all equally as important. Now, just for this season, you may almost make the case as Jordan Vandenberg because he plays the defensive line position where we've all agreed, except for the Bears, that they tend to really struggle and not only getting to the quarterback, but also stopping the run with the group that they had. And by the way, if you'd said, well, he's a sixth rounder, how much can you really lean on him? This stat, David Dykstra, this stat that we talked about on Saturday with our draft coverage. Should I make Tyler guess again? No, Tyler, I won't. He's like, damn it, stop asking me questions. Let me work. Among active players in the 2025 season, 63% were drafted in rounds 4 through 7 or went undrafted. 63% rounds 4 through 7 are undrafted. There's so much to get into that. I think the first one may tell you scouting may not always be that easy, even if it is the first, second, or third round, right? Why is a first round draft pick more valuable than a fifth round draft pick? You're supposed to be able to tell more about who is great because of the skill set they have. It's supposed to be clear and obvious in the first round. It obviously is not, according to that statistic. I also think it matters where undrafted guys go to get good coaching and more opportunities. And maybe your second round talent ain't that much better than your fifth round talent. 63% of the league rounds 4 through 7 are undrafted. That's where they all came from in 2025. By the way, the whole following the draft or best player available, did you guys see the Kansas City Chiefs draft? Did you guys see? Like, it's like best player available, or you're just going to go all defense with your first four picks. The Chiefs had two guys that were both mocked to the Bears regularly. They traded up from 9 to 6 for Mansoor Delane, the cornerback. They then got Peter Woods, pick number 29 overall in the first round. They then go R. Mason Thomas in the second round. And then Jadon Kennedy, the cornerback out of Oregon. So they go cornerback, defensive tackle, edge rusher, cornerback. It's like, can the Bears trade their draft with the Chiefs? It's almost like for the last 3 months, we've covered the Chiefs draft, yet called it the Bears. I mean, Peter Woods and R. Mason Thomas, both names mentioned a lot on the station, end up going to the Kansas City Chiefs. Don't tell me it is all about best player available. And don't tell me the Kansas City Chiefs and Andy Reid don't know how to run a draft. I just found that to be very interesting that two mains mentioned a lot mocked to the Bears. Both of them went to one team, being the Kansas City Chiefs. All right, back to the Cubs. A phenomenal win today in San Diego. They win the series there 5-4. We've been taking your reaction. We're about 20% of the way into the season. We're doing a check-in. As confident as you were, this roster, are you still there or does there need to be changes? I will also raise my hand and tell you where I was wrong about a thought I had about Pete Crow Armstrong. He's heating up. We'll talk about it coming up next.
Let's get back to more Judson Richards on 104.3 The Score.
All right, great to be with you on a Wednesday night. Judson Richards here. David Dykstra, Tyler Farenthold doing a great job on the other side of the glass. Speaking of doing a great job, he does so with the Marquee Sports Network. Alex Cohen will join us coming up at 8 o'clock. You know, Alex from Play-by-Play was handling pre- and post-game duties tonight with Lance Brozdowski and Elise Menaker. So Alex is going to pop in with us at 8 o'clock. We'll dive into this Cubs team as he does such a great job inside and out knowing the numbers. Oftentimes, I learn a lot of my statistics just following him on the social media. Speaking of, I was thinking about Pete Crow Armstrong, and PCA has had a rough go of it this season, right, early on. And we know about the throwing of the helmet or the bat to the otherwise and something that he's trying to stop doing virtually, right? He's trying not to wear his emotions on his sleeve. And you feel like Craig Counsell has really defended him and allowed him to be him. But even PCA is saying, hey, this isn't the example I want to set. This isn't something I should be doing. And I had the thought, maybe, not ever thinking about sending Pete Crow Armstrong down. First of all, you're not doing that to a guy you just signed a big long-term contract to. But when he's in the throes of it, I thought maybe this guy should just get more days off against left-handers, right? I mean, he's playing every single day, and we know why. It's because he is so damn good at center field, right? He just, you don't want to ever take him out of center field, and if he does get on base, we know how quickly he can change the game. And I thought, well, maybe from a matchup standpoint, emotionally, between the ears, you know, just like we defend these starting pitchers' arms, what if you would defend a little between the ears? If you know a guy that's going to carve up a lefty-lefty matchup, then maybe not play him every single day. But you know what? PCA's numbers, by the way, are a little bit better against left-handed pitching. 48 at-bats so far this season, 271, 364 on base percentage, 396 slug. Against righties, 221 batting average, 264, 338. He's been pretty good lefty-lefty matchups, but most importantly, his last 15 games, Pete Armstrong's hitting 300, two home runs, six walks, a 500 slug, the big one, a 397 on-base percentage. Pete Armstrong is absolutely heating up. And as I told you last year, the Cubs, they were 72-34 in games they homered in. Pete had a huge part in that, as did Michael Busch, as did Seiya Suzuki. The homer means so much. But the reason why, you know what, at this point, it's like, let's just let him figure it out. Let's just let him figure it out, match up, right? Pete, because he was injured in the minors, did not have a lot of minor league at-bats. And a lot of times your high school guys, you let them get 1,000, 2,000 plus at-bats where they can figure themselves out. Figure out what works, figure out how they see the ball, figure out their pregame rituals, whatever they love to do. Pete's been doing a lot of that at the big league level. But he is so talented, and we know if he heats up how great he can be. Let's talk about how also defensively. I thought this was really interesting. On MLB Network, another great center fielder, formerly Kevin Kiermaier. This is what he said on MLB Network about PCA.
Good instincts and that good initial read, then more times than not, you're going to be able to finish the play.
All right, so in Sedan Rafaela, right to left, Victor Scott. How about the guy that goes back the best?
PCA, the best overall center fielder in the game. He is incredible. Just his speed, I've hyped him up for months, years now. I mean, he does everything at the elite level. Fearless out there and just, you know, just effortless and just, he glides to the ball and outruns it many times. Look at that right there. I mean, I always tell people too, what separates the great outfielders from the good outfielders are the guys who go back on the ball, who can play on the wall, take away them extra base hits. Anyone can play deep and run in and catch a ball that we're looking at the whole time. But those guys who can go back and get it, once again, you take away doubles, triples,
yeah,
rob homers. It's a huge momentum swing, and the defensive metrics love you. And it's not an easy play, but the guys who go about the right way, work on batting practice, they know we dream of making those plays. And I know all these guys I'm mentioning love making these plays just as much as I did.
That was great on MLB Network, and a guy that it's nice to hear someone who can play the position like Kevin Kiermaier could. And hear him talk about Pete Armstrong be the guy that he is. ESPN.com had a really great article about PCA. And Pete told the story about a father telling him that his son threw a piece of equipment or threw a bat and it hit a teammate and he had to pull him off the field. And when he, you know, got on his son for doing it, his son said, Pete Armstrong does that. And that story was relayed to Pete. Obviously, that is not the guy that Pete wants to be. Now, again, if you're in the bigs, maybe you can toss your bat a little bit more than you're on your, you know, U10 team out there. But so much of us, me included, we focused on his batting stance, right? We focus on where he holds his hands. We focus on his landing foot. We focus on whether or not he swings at the first pitch or takes the first pitch. What we're going to have to wait for as he's going through it right now is, I believe, really just emotional maturity. Mental maturity, everything else as he becomes a man and a baseball player. It's almost a little bit like you got to put the man first and then worry about his on-base percentage second, and that will follow. I don't think we have any idea what it's like to be a young man to have that many people expecting you to deliver day in, day out. Yes, it must be a lot of fun. Yes, we'd all love to sit courtside with Caleb Williams and, you know, go sit right on the ice and watch Connor Bedard. Yes, I'm sure it's a lot of fun. But damn it, there is a lot of pressure into living up for everyone. For the kids that wear your jersey, for the team that signs you to a multi-million dollar contract, to also facing the best, most electric pitching in the world. So as we watch Pete heat up, I'm not so convinced that it's a guy figuring out his batting stance. I think it's a guy figuring out, and it's going to take some time, which is fine. He's got a lot of years to do it. And if you're struggling to play, just be great out there in center field, and you will help your team win immensely. But growing into becoming a man and handling failures and dealing with all of the things that we've watched him do, what you feel like a young guy would do who wants to be perhaps the greatest of all time in his position, I know that's his mindset. Why put a ceiling on it? But I think when you read more about why he's maturing, that is also going to head into the batter's box with him. Not just launch angle, not just pitch selection, not just on base percentage, but just simply growing up in the public eye. I'm not going to say he's done it by any means. He's got a long ways to go, but we are absolutely watching him heat up. And the longer it gets in his career, the more he'll be able to hold on to it, sustain it, and those numbers will last longer. The consistency, the great at-bats will last longer. Coming up next, Alex Cohen of the Marquee Sports Network. He's watched a lot of PCA. How does he feel about the player he's becoming? And this Cubs run as well. How good is this Cubs team? We'll ask Alex. Coming up next, 104.3 The Score.